I'll talk about his story. We'll talk to Caroline Anning from Save the Children. I'm going to begin, though, with the comments of a Conservative MP called Brooks Newmarker, who chairs the all-party parliamentary group of Friends of Syria. I spoke to him just before we came on air because he's one of those involved in the conference right now, and I began by asking him about those chlorine bomb attacks on Aleppo.
Ever since we had that famous red line back in 2013 with respect to the use of chemical weapons, Assad changed his strategy from using what was defined as a chemical weapon to using what are effectively chlorine bombs. And chlorine, unfortunately, under the definition of a chemical weapon, doesn't fit within that. So we've seen several incidents since 2013, and particularly recently in Aleppo, the use of these chlorine bombs. And anybody who goes on, you know, social media in particular, will see the effect this has on people who have chlorine dropped on them, which is terrible.
Yeah, the thought of actually a leader dropping chlorine on his citizens is an extraordinary one, isn't it? And I mean,
well, Assad is an extraordinary person. I mean, this is a guy who's doing everything possible to try and protect his family and his family's interests at the cost of his own people. There have been 400,000 plus innocent civilians killed since the start of the war 5 years ago. 96% of those 400,000 civilians have been killed by Bashar Assad. He is the biggest terrorist today in the Middle East. People worry about IS. IS have done terrible things, but actually the statistics are IS have killed less than 1% of civilians in Syria. The biggest terrorist today in the Middle East is Bashar Assad, and we must do all we can to stop him.
Yeah, that's interesting you put it that way. In those circumstances, then, what is the way out of where we are now? I know today you're meeting a coalition of opposition groups and talking about a peaceful future, but Assad is there. Russia stands beside him. What do you do about that?
I know that is the conundrum, is that, you know, Assad has now Putin as his master. Putin is becoming the master puppeteer, not just in the Ukraine, as we've seen, but now in Syria. Putin himself has been accused of dropping phosphorus bombs and deliberately targeting hospitals in and around Aleppo. But nobody seems to be holding either of these characters, Assad or Putin, to account. And I believe they must be held to account.
By whom?
Well, by the world community. I think the difficulty is doing that through the UN, because the UN itself, with the rules and the Security Council, prevents that. The irony is that with Russia as one of the five members, it makes it very difficult. So we need to find alternative ways around it. And I think one of the things we should now be thinking about, otherwise I'm afraid you and I in a year's time will be having another conversation with another 100,000 plus people dead, is having a strategy of keeping the skies clear over Syria. Unless we do that, Assad and Putin will continue dropping bombs, chlorine bombs, phosphorus bombs, barrel bombs on innocent civilians.
Because you're talking about a no-fly zone implemented by, I guess, America. Well, has to be in there.
Well, I'm afraid, you know, we did that in the Balkans, we may well have to do that again. Otherwise, we will just stand by, wring our hands, and see the massacre continue. And I know, you know, there is no good choices here. There has never been good choices. But, you know, as we've seen, you know, following the 2013 debate and vote, that sometimes doing nothing is not always the best option.
Do you think Boris Johnson is persuaded of your arguments?
Probably not. I think Boris will probably be taking a very cautious approach. I think obviously the focus at the moment with the Foreign Secretary, with the Prime Minister, are issues closer to home with the implementing Brexit. I suspect we will see, and John Kerry has given 110% in his negotiations with Lavrov to try and at least get some humanitarian aid into Syria, particularly to Aleppo, where the people today, I think there's 300,000-ish people left there, are being starved to death. You know, allowing in humanitarian aid must be a priority. In order to do that, they have to stop barrel bombing and dropping chlorine bombs. Now, I'm hoping there will be steps towards that, but at this stage, while both Assad and Putin think that they can win this war, which they can't do, and while they think that they can win it, they will not negotiate seriously. The only way individuals negotiate seriously are if they think they can't win.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid we're in another situation like Lebanon, where you and I will be having this discussion next year and the year after, because at this stage, I just can't see a way forward unless we stop the aerial campaign of dropping chlorine bombs and barrel bombs on the people of Syria.
In those circumstances, what point to meeting your meetings today with potential opposition groups?
The Friends of Syria. So the Friends of Syria are basically a coalition of ordinary Syrians, a wide range of people representing not just the Sunni community, but the Christian community, the Shia community, the Alawi community, a broad coalition the Friends of Syria represent, plus the international community, to have a strategy, because this is what probably most your listeners will be want, is the importance of dialogue is important, and that maybe jaw is better than war. I take a different view of it. I take a more robust view that unless we clear the air of these planes that are causing the mayhem on the ground, the other party actually won't engage in serious negotiations. And I think both Putin and Lavrov have pursued a strategy of keeping the West talking while they continue to bomb the people of Syria.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you feel that we perhaps missed the trick before when we refused to get involved.
I mean, yes, I think 2013 we had that opportunity. I think we would have accelerated the process of sitting down to a serious negotiation. Now, at the end of the day, I suspect Putin will deliver on getting rid of Assad. The question is, how much blood has to be spilt between now and then?
That's MP Brooks Newmark. Andy writes on a text, sadly, the problems of Syria can largely be laid at the door of an incredibly weak American president who, when it came down to confronting Assad's attacks on civilians, blinked first and backed off. He failed to confront Russia over and over again, not just in Syria, but in Georgia and Ukraine. The world needs Hillary Clinton. She is man enough to stand up to a bully in the Kremlin. More of your views on 85058 or 0500-909-693. I'm also just reading that the chief Syrian opposition negotiator is just saying at those talks we mentioned in London that Assad must leave power 6 months after transition negotiations start. It remains the demand of opposition that he has to go. Let's get some assessment then with those three guests I mentioned, the first of which is Tim Eaton, Syria expert at Chatham House. That's an independent international affairs think tank. Tim, from a kind of a military balance point of view, is it fair to say that at the moment Assad and with his Russian allies is getting a firmer grip on Syria, or is it still stalemate?
I think it's best described as a dynamic stalemate in which each side has the ability to land blows to the other, but none of them are able to land a decisive blow. And as your correspondent indicated, it is the facts on the ground that dictate the diplomatic process in many ways. And if you look at the background to that diplomatic process, which has largely become a discussion between the US and Russia, we'll see that as the situation on the ground changes, the mood changes as well. So it looked like the US and Russia might be able to agree a deal ahead of the recent assault on Aleppo. Yet as the regime's forces has sought to counterattack and continues to seek to counterattack, the Russians seem to have delayed and stalled on that US deal. So this is a constant thing that's happening in the Syrian conflict. Each time an agreement seems to be close to being made to get the step forward, something changes on the ground which causes one side or another to delay because they believe it's in their immediate interests.
What is President Putin's game plan here? In a way, he's the key factor. He's the man on the ground with the power. And presumably, in Assad, he has somebody who he can probably dictate to. So what do you think he wants?
Well, I think that's overstated. The ability of President Putin to dictate to Assad is debatable. We've seen over the last 6 to 9 months where the Russians have come to agreement with the Americans, they've either been unwilling or unable to deliver concessions from the Syrian regime. So I think it's easy to underestimate how much autonomy President Assad yeah. has. And as Mr. Newmark mentioned on the air power, clearly air power is one of the major advantages, or the preeminent advantage, that the regime possesses on the ground. And it's unlikely to give that up without significant concessions from the opposition. So it all factors in here. But in terms of what Russia really wants, it's debated. But clearly Russia is seeking to shore up its interests in Syria. And at present, it believes that the best way to do that is to support President Assad.
Yeah, you said earlier it's a kind of stalemate because both sides can still land significant blows on each other. And if it were a boxing match, then you'd have to think, well, probably it will go on. And I guess what you're saying is this is going to go on, are you?
I am. And to continue that metaphor, it'd be one that seems to be decided on points. So while the Syrian opposition's program being unveiled today is important because it lays out their vision for a Syria post-Assad, that's an important part of their negotiating position that it's good that they're unveiling. But the truth is that there's no means through which to remove Assad at the moment. That's foreseeable. And that is the baseline of both sides, and that's why this will continue, particularly as they still have the capacity to land those immediate blows.
Right. Thank you for that, Tim. Pretty gloomy prognosis, all this, but we're trying to give you the facts of this situation. I've got a couple of other interesting guests to talk to about it. The first of them is Qatara Yunus, who is a Palestinian-Syrian refugee who now runs a media company in Malmo, providing news and information for fellow refugees in Sweden. Tell us about your story, Qatara. When were you there?
Hi. Thank you for having me. I came to Sweden in 2013. And I have been stuck between two countries, my mind in Syria and my life in Sweden.
Yeah. Where did you come from in Syria?
Yeah. I came from Yarmouk camp, Damascus, middle of Damascus. I think you know Yarmouk.
Yeah. So what do you think about...